Accession number 13717, Lieutenant Colonel Charles G. Real 5.
Lieutenant Colonel G, Real 5. We were discussing a sort of typical day when you were adjutant in the line and the sort of thing you were doing during the day. And you said you not a lot often.
Many little still, and I couldn't leave the telephone. And occasionally a new officer or something like that would come up, or been told to come up, and would wait for the colonel, and we'd look after him. And I think I remember being told not to feed him, just let him stop in the trench. Quite safe, just let him wait. Don't fuss about him.
This was how you knew that
yes.
The colonel wouldn't would let people sweat a bit before,
yes.
before he saw them.
Yes.
So you'd spend the day there. What sort of... You were in the Arras area when you were at Bradford, mainly, when you
yes.
were in the line, weren't you?
Yes.
Between Gwemep and Cherisy.
Yes.
What were the trenches like there? Could you give us a description of the type of trench that you had? What state they were in?
They were in a good state, as the ground was dry, and the weather was good on the whole, all that summer, at Arras anyway. The communication trenches always were a menace because they were narrow, and if you met somebody going the other way, it was a nuisance. And that's one of the reasons why he wanted people always, if it was reasonably safe, to walk on top at night. And when I went round the trenches, you'd go up a communication trench, see the support line, or particularly the front line, everything clean.
How deep would it be?
Oh, 8 foot or something like that.
And was it, as in the manual, you know, parados, fire step, parapet, you know.
Yes, and the length of it, I can't quite remember. The length of a fire bay would be about the length of this room, I should think.
About 15 feet.
Yes, you'd get a number of people firing, and there'd be a sentry on, but only about one sentry per company by day, so the other men could rest. And by arrangement, rest, feed, shave, do some musketry, and PT
now,
and exercises.
When you said he was very strict about, you know, the condition of the trenches. When you were sent forward, would you inspect the trenches? Would you?
No, I didn't. I didn't do any inspecting of them.
So when you,
if I'd seen anything wrong, I'd have told him.
So when you went forward, why would he send you forward instead of him?
To get used to going round.
So it was purely...
Training me.
It wasn't because he couldn't go.
And after the raid, I think it was so that I would get an impression from the men of what he ordinarily did or what he'd said, because he was right over that.
So when you went forward, it was just to gain experience?
Yes.
And... So you wouldn't talk to the men particularly? Would you?
Not particularly. One or two would take a gun round. Somebody would take me round and say, oh, there's a bit of a gap here, so I'd go quickly because they're a sniper. And I would get across and perhaps a man following me and would get a bullet near him. I mean, they were a real... And I was in no danger, in one sense.
How did you feel? And I mean, you were under no danger, but there was a risk of sniping.
Oh, yes, there was.
There was shell fire, mortar
fire. It didn't worry me particularly. There wasn't much shell fire in that front that year. There was an occasion later, I'll tell you, when I was very frightened.
But that was a fairly gentle introduction.
Oh, yes, gentle. And on some occasion I was sent up in the dark, and to go out through the wire into no man's land to get used to the sort of feel of it. And the men are told to go out every night just to get used to it.
Not every man every night. You mean?
I think that was stated, but it didn't happen. But everybody had to know where the holes in the wire were and to be prepared to go out.
So it was more that everybody was meant to gain experience of being, yes, in no man's land, rather, yes, than literally to be, yes, out there every night. Otherwise, yes, you'd have the. So even though you were the adjutant, by definition, almost his staff officer, his personal, yes, assistant, he was still getting you used to, true, being a fighting officer.
Yes. And to the battalion, and for them to know me, I suppose, as well.
What would you judge was the morale of the battalion?
Terribly good, because they'd been very successful for a long time. And somewhere in that summer, I got the idea of young people, we wanted young people, and would work them, if they were suitable material, work them almost to death. And if they were good, and they would get a company and be worked to death. And by the time they'd had a bit of experience of fighting, if they seemed tired, you'd get them a soft job or send them on a course, which was, a course at Boulogne or somewhere.
So he'd take
them like a fortnight's holiday.
He'd take them in at the headquarters, work them to death, then give them a company, work them to death, and then, yes, get them a holiday.
Yes, that sort of thing. And
so although you saw him as a hard taskmaster, he was fairly sympathetic to the stress,
yes,
and strain.
Yes.
But he showed no sign of it himself?
No sign at all.
What about, you said at one point that some of the officers weren't so good.
Well, a lot went.
Even in the ninth?
Even in the ninth, they were poor. But if there were enough good ones and Bradford, it didn't matter. Because the men counted, and the sergeants, and so on.
Would you say that the sergeants were more important than the officers in some way, then?
I think they were, yes. But Bradford and the men were in very close touch, and the officers bullied along to be adequate. But so some were good.
Do you remember the names of the good ones, or anyone?
Marshall, the one that I went to Paris with, was very good.
Who?
Marshall. He'd been the adjutant for a few weeks just before I took over. He wanted to be in a company, and was youngish, and eager, and a very good company commander. And I saw him after the war too. He was a Roman Catholic parson.
He was good.
Me.
What about your friend Plummer?
He was very good in terms of the Bradford worked him terribly hard
what
in training his men.
Training them?
In training.
What sort of things was he training them in?
Map reading, everything. Going there, they were all, when trained, they were all reliable to go out to the front and remember and, or go back. Or guide the mules up at night, bridging side trenches and things. And they were terribly good. And the standard that Bradford expected from him and his men amazed me.
What about the other company officers? Any other good ones come to mind that you know the names or remember?
Not particularly. I can't.
Now, the bad ones, their main problem was that they lacked go then, or?
Yes.
They weren't keen.
They weren't very keen.
And
but they were all, I think, they were all pretty impressive that summer. When we get on to that practice attack at Cherisi, afternoon attack, they all seemed good.
So would he get rid of bad officers?
Oh, yes, he would.
How?
Somehow. Get them posted somewhere, send them off as Lewis gun instructors or something. Would get rid of bad ones.
Was there a view that you were the elite?
Yes.
The 9th Battalion, the DLI,
yes,
isn't that high in the British
Army? We had that impression, yes.
But you felt...
Oh, yes.
Even though you were just another territorial yes. battalion of another line regiment...
And by and large, I realised how incredibly inefficient the battalion must have been before the war.
Why was that? Could you explain?
Well, they just play. Eventually, one of the battalion officers arrived. I'd never seen him. The older people knew him, wearing colonel's pips and an MC. He put second in command of a company to a full lieutenant, which would be the corps. But they knew this person had come up as a complete dud. And eventually he had to be arrested as being an utter, got into action by accident, because the company commander was away, and he men were nearly shooting him. He wasn't trying. Didn't listen to orders, didn't do anything. And the colonel put him under arrest, and we could not get the next colonel put him under arrest. We couldn't get rid of him.
And he was a pre-war territorial?
Yes.
And he was useless?
Useless. He got an MC because the colonel, the pre-war colonel whom I served under afterwards in TA, the one camp, said all my men said in two recommendations or MC that all my men deserve it, give it to the senior captain and the senior and the older lieutenant. And he didn't know them.
So he'd got an MC.
He'd got an MC.
With the rations, in a sense.
With the rations. And he'd been in command of some Labour people, and somehow he got things up. But Crouch was the colonel, and he said, I wouldn't. I said, can't he do anything? There he was, wasting an officer in his tent all day, with an officer to keep him in arrest. So two men, useless. They can't read any. I wouldn't put him in charge of a lavatory man. Absolutely sure. The only way we got rid of him was became town major of some useless area at rather bigger salary than he was getting as a captain. He'd gone down to lieutenant then.
But most of the officers when Bradford was in, your first period, yes. You know, before Bradford left, they were all right. They weren't good, some of them, but they were all right.
There were four good company commanders who kept me in my place. And
what about
kept
the
companies all right, but the staffing and the other officers were just all right.
So the second lieutenants were just all right?
Yes.
And Bradford seems to have almost bypassed... officers straight to the men.
Rather than the way Montgomery did in the Second War. Some occasions, I'm told, you'd have a divisional parade and they'd sweat like anything and get it right. Come, officers dismissed, don't want you. See you in the mess later. I want the men. Gather round. And almost to the men and say, the officers don't come from the men, all the men.
And that was Bradford's attitude.
Yes. The officers he could see later and so on.
Now, so on this, we're digressing slightly from our typical day, but so on a typical day, when you went out instead of Bradford, you wouldn't stay out all day. You'd just go around.
No, I'd just be sent out to see what was what and see, get the feel of things and see what to do if the colonel wasn't there training for me.
And then you'd come back?
Come back. And do very little except talk to the others and gather.
So Bradford would come back, and then what would happen in the line?
We'd get supper of some sort.
That was literally supper time. He'd been out 8 hours, 12 hours.
Best part of 8 hours, yes. Get supper, take us off if anything arose, and went and sleep, I think. He probably read a book or somewhere. He had a little sort of cubbyhole he retired to. He didn't stay chatting with us. He kept himself separate, thinking his own thoughts or reading his own stuff or writing pamphlets to send around the army, as he did them nearly all. Anything, thinking of what he'd say to the staff when he saw them, etc.
Now, as a man, when Bradford was with you, What did you think of the other battalions of 151 Brigade? In the, you know, the 6th, 8th? Well,
I felt that they were worse. I felt that we were the best. Because I'm a bit used to that sort of thing at school with houses. But I think it was, I think I was taught the job was to make my platoon the best platoon in the company and help make the company the best in the battalion and so on. Competition.
And that's when you were, before you were adjutant?
Yes. It was adjutant. I thought and knew that the battalion was incredibly good with Bradford, and a lot of people had decorations. And that's in the book that almost there were a lot. And people hoped to get them if they earned them.
Now, what about your daily routine when you were out of the line? Now, there you'd have an office, I presume.
At an office, I would get up in the morning and get some breakfast, or go to the office first, see if anything urgent, have breakfast.
What might be urgent?
I don't know, some letter or order that had come in late or something come in that morning that I'd have to see the colonel about quickly. I'd have breakfast, go back to the office and wait for Bradford to come and stand there while he read the mail and said, lose that or answer this or dictated an answer or various things, partly watching what he did, partly being, I was being taught, and taught to help him, I suppose, and things that I could do or that he couldn't. When he was away for an odd day or two at the brigade, everything went on just as usual without the second in command coming and taking over.
So you'd do it?
Yes, I would do it. And would either bring him up or get the second in command if I was in doubt about it, but I got quite confident of doing it. And I was being trained. Why he wanted me, I don't know. I was intelligent, I think, and he had a different kind from his, and may accidentally have helped him a bit. But he didn't ask for advice, he got it occasionally. But,
Was he the sort of man that you could give advice to?
Oh, I think so, yes.
He wasn't a know-it-all then?
Oh, no. He would, in his wild schemes, he would go to the second in command, who had been in the Boer War and so on, and knew the army from inside, and he would tone down some of his wild schemes or say, be careful about that.
Crouch would?
Yes.
So Crouch did have a fund of experience?
Oh, yes, a fund of experience. And when we were in the other division, the divisional commanders came and communed with him to get in touch with the
army.
Now,
you say wild schemes. What sort of... Because some of his schemes were practical, but what about the wilder element? What sort of thing would Bradford suggest that was wild or would need toning down or impractical?
Well, he was always working, trying to think of some sort of protection to getting men across to the enemy wire.
Now, you mentioned that, and it is in the book, but you actually remember him doing that?
Yes, I remember him trying to and drawing pictures and so on and talking to me about it and realising the difficulty and the weight and so on.
What sort of thing was it? You said sort of things to protect you. What material was he working with, though?
Something at the side to protect you from bullets that had been joined. That was...
So it wasn't so much wild as in dangerous,
no,
it was wild as in impractical.
Yeah, and yes, not quite practical.
So although it wasn't, his wild schemes weren't madcap schemes for attacks that would lose men, no. It was just impracticalities to defend the men.
The thing, for instance, going back a bit, going to Evian for a day, the thing that might say, well, we're in support, you can't, it'll be a company short if they want it. But if you're in reserve or further back, just advice that if it goes wrong, and he was always urging people not to use communication trenches if it was safe. But some people that always used communication trenches were afraid of walking. You tended to get afraid of walking except crawling up a trench and keeping people's confidence and reasonable fearlessness.
That's how you seem. That's an interesting phrase, reasonable fearlessness.
Yes.
Is that how you think of him, reasonably
yes.
fearless?
Yes.
So not impractically fearless, as you thought of Sassoon, for instance.
We always the last out of the trench, should he and me, and usually, here we are, another way, get out of the trench, walk back in the open, and he knew a way back, always without meeting trenches. Didn't have to jump them or anything.
And this was always in areas of dead ground, where the Germans couldn't see you?
Yeah, well, in the dark, it didn't matter.
So it would be in the dark he did it more?
Yes.
And in dead ground?
And in dead ground, yes.
Oh, you're still vulnerable to fixed line firing, shell firing, but he reckoned that was an acceptable risk?
Yes. Oh, you have to take, be prepared to take some risks, otherwise you were taught to be a punk. And to some extent, the Germans lost out a bit on all their dugouts, because they eventually, Radford says in the book, we were better than the Germans at close hand-to-hand fighting.
So during, I've digressed, but we're on a typical day, and you'd be in the office, standing beside or behind.
Radford, yes.
And then, how long would the day last in the office? You'd be producing the daily returns, you'd be doing the daily orders.
You'd be working and presumably listening and hearing me getting ticked off often. And
By Bradford?
Yes, and then Bradford would go round the camp to see the transport and everything.
He'd do that on a daily basis, would he?
Oh, yes. Every day.
And was he, I presume, as strict about hygiene, cleanliness?
Oh, yes, everything. Everything for efficiency. And old people were keyed up about his visit. And when he was away, I did it for him. I mean, went round everybody, see that all was all right. Know what was due to happen. And as the second in command would presume to be watching the company's trading.
That was his?
I hardly saw him in the ordinary way.
And so the day would last till about where? Or how long a day? You said he used to work a long day.
It was early morning. I don't know, I can't remember the time, 7 or something, got up early. And Bradford in the afternoon, out of the line, would retire to his tent and change on fresh air, and didn't want to be disturbed unless it was important, because he was busy with his own work or his own training in speaking or planning, etc.
What do you mean in speaking?
It comes in the book. He was.
But I know it's in the book. But do you remember him doing it?
No,
well?
I don't. But he would be likely to, because he did make speeches to the men, and they had to be important because he wanted the men devoted to him.
So, you didn't know he did it, but
no.
It would be like, yeah.
But
so he spent the afternoon in there. What would you be doing during that time? Some more office work, I presume?
More office work, and occasionally going to the canteen for some chocolate. My horse liked chocolate as well. And so did Bradford, because he once pulled my leg about it, and I answered back, "Well, you like it as well, because I know you had some too." But the afternoon was a bit more of a rest, because I was working and on duty. And it went on pretty late at night, because quite often in fine weather, I'd pack in there at 6 and go round towards supper, and we'd play this coit game or something, and have some sort of supper, and then I'd be working in the ordinary room again, and probably Bradford as well, for a bit.
Another stint in the evening.
Quite a late night. And
Do you think you did more than other battalions did? I mean, you'd come into contact with them. I mean, would their adjutants work a day like that?
I don't think so. I think I was very hard worked, mainly being taught, I think.
Now, you were a very young man, 19, I think. 19. Bradford was 24, 25.
Yeah, 24 right. Then.
Do you think there are advantages in having such young men at the centre?
Yes.
Do you think it was a young man's war?
Trench warfare it was. Open warfare, I know very little about it. Nearly open in 18, and people weren't trained for it properly. A lot of it went a bit wrong, but some of it got right.
But you think trench warfare, it was an advantage to have people like yourself and Bradford?
Yes, I think young people could get used to anything. Older people, it's a strain.
Now, one thing we have, it's a daily routine we're talking about. You said out of the line, he had a daily complaint. Not about you, but a daily complaint. Yeah. Could you explain what you meant by that?
Finding fault with the food, suggesting more on this, or complaining there wasn't enough laboratory paper. Every day in orders, I had to say, 4 pieces per man will be distributed or available, and people had to get it. And we got, the rumour was we got all the laboratory paper of the Corps, because he was so strict about
now,
it.
Now, let me get this clear. These complaints, were they weren't directed in battalion, they were above?
Yes, to the staff first.
To brigade or to division?
Wanted to go to brigade and on to division, if they thought fit.
And each, so he'd send in each day a different request or demand or complaint.
Largely, leave was very common. Whiskey, possibly, trying to get people less whiskey drunk. Leave again and again. Rations, toilet paper, and something, if possible, to keep the.
So he harassed.
Staff.
He harassed his brigade staff and
yes.
Division.
Yes, they obviously got peeved when they put all these things away, and then one got through about leave, which was pretty violently worded. And in the book, the account he gives of his best action on the Somme, catching the butt of Ollencourt, he says at the end, it is. Wasn't of much value, even if we'd had it, and this sort of attack is unnecessary, which is a terrific criticism of the Corps and general and divisional commanders.
So Bradford said that, and so he was quite insolent almost.
Oh, yes, almost.
Almost.
But that is in the book.
I did see that. I want to concentrate more on when you were there, though. So he'd send something like that up every day?
Yes, and some of them got worded a bit violently, because he was fed up with not having...
Who was your brigadier, do you remember?
Cameron at one time, and that's all I can remember.
Was that while Bradford was with you?
Yes.
What was Cameron... How did Cameron react to having this...
I don't know. I didn't ever speak to him, I don't think. But
what
I did gather was that... I was told by Bradford, if anybody comes here asking around, just say that's the colonel's business, and I wasn't to tell them anything. The colonel would, and if they found fault with him, he could say, so that bloody fool of an adjutant of mine. And they're caught. We could do what we liked, really.
So you didn't, the brigadier wouldn't visit you?
No.
Do you not think he should have done?
I think he should.
Battalions?
I think he should have visited the battalions more. I don't think I ever spoke to him.
What about your divisional commander? Do you remember who that was at the time?
Was Wilkinson. I knew that by name, and I never spoke to him. I saw him once, I think.
So they didn't have Bradford's attitude?
No,
too.
Never. Yeah.
So it was an unusual attitude to get
yes.
round your subordinates, get round your subordinate people. It was very unusual at the time.
Very unusual, yes.